Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Welcome back into Morning Drive, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Nick Braden, D-Mace, and Marquise with you live here on a Football Friday. Good to have you in. Our buddy Teron Davenport will be joining us this morning coming up at 7:30. Of course, your Titans calls welcomed at 615-737-1025. All right, so let's get back into this game a little bit for Sunday. And I saw this from a stats and analytic company called New Age Analytical. And they put together a early down pass rate in the NFL. So first and second downs. And the Tennessee Titans are the third most conservative team, meaning they throw it the third least amount of times on first and second downs in the NFL. The only two teams that do it less are the Colts and the Broncos. So I guess by just common sense, that would mean we are getting Derrick Henry. But does that mean we're happy? Because we wanted Derrick Henry, we're right. Getting him, and we're not getting the results we want from the team.
Well, and some of that's the offensive line without Taylor Lewan certainly is a factor there. Some of that's playing Jacksonville's defense. That defensive line is pretty spectacular and probably is going to be pretty good all year. But yeah, I think the basic point is you wanted to see, Derrick said it last segment, you wanted to see this offense run through Derrick Henry first and foremost. We've gotten that to some degree. It sometimes it's worked. Many times it's worked. Sometimes it hasn't. Of their 9 3 and outs, Derrick Henry got a carry on 6 of those. So, you know, it's not like it's leading to touchdowns and it's leading to 3 and outs, right? It's leading to both. I don't think there's enough data yet. That's good information, but I don't think there's enough data yet to suggest that that Arthur Smith is doing one thing or the other thing right or wrong. He's clearly leaning on Derrick Henry. And for now, it's been okay. The offensive line is still a major concern, not just protecting the quarterback, but running the football. They're all better at running, though. So at run blocking, Saffold in particular, I don't know why you wouldn't make that your bread and butter. Again, punch Atlanta in the mouth, lean on Derrick Henry, and let Dean Pease work his magic on the other side of the ball.
Doesn't this – I mean, because it feels like this is a catch-22 from a fan base perspective. The fans want to see Derrick Henry. Let the big dog eat, as Jared Stillman says every day at 2 o'clock. Let the big dog eat. Well, that's fine, but then, you know, some of these numbers would suggest that Arthur Smith is very predictable. Predictability is great if you can't stop it, but yeah. if you struggle to stop, if you struggle to succeed, then it's all like, oh, this guy's clearly in over his head.
Yeah, I mean, you can. If it's working, then it's great. If it's not working, then obviously, you know, we're going to say, or even the offense, some of the offensive players are saying, you know, we're so predictable. You know, it's hard because they have, if you do the things that I'm asking you to do and you block it the way it's supposed to be blocked, then no matter what you do, we're going to get, I can be predictable, but you just got to stop me in my predictability. And I think a lot of teams, you know, a lot of teams in the NFL are predictable and based on down and distance and what they're going to do. You know, because after about 5 games, you pretty much are who you are. 5 or 6 games, you pretty much are who you are within that season unless you have injuries. I'm not too worried about the predictability when it comes to the Titans offense. I'm worried about the execution of the predictability because if you execute it the way you're supposed to execute it, then, you know, it's going to work. And if you don't, then, you know, we're going to have a problem. So I'm not too – I get it. You know, we can point to that Arthur Smith is being predictable. But I think he's still trying to find out what he can and can't do with this offense based upon their personnel.
If that number exists and they're the third most quote-unquote conservative team after 14 games – Then we know it's a real thing. I think we need to see a little bit more data. It kind of is what it is through 3 weeks, but if that number is still the case in week 10, 11, 12, 13, and they're still clearly the team that runs the football more than anybody else in the NFL, largely on first and second down, then we'll have a really good way to evaluate Derrick Henry. We'll have a really good way to evaluate Arthur Smith and a really good way to evaluate the quarterback and the offensive line. So it's I think we need a little bit more data, a few more weeks of action before we start before teams become who they really are. But we know this is the direction, again, like you said, you're kind of damned if you do, damned if you don't, right? Like, if you run the ball and it's not working and you lose, people are going to say, why'd you run the ball? And if you, you know, if you don't run, like, you're just, the play calling is always going to be the most easily criticized thing that happens for a football team. It's,
well,
Jim Chaney, yeah. Arthur Smith, whatever.
Prime example last night of predictability versus execution. Carson Wentz only threw it 27 times. Aaron Rodgers threw it 53. And I think one of those reasons was Green Bay could not run the football.
Yeah.
Yet the Eagles were able to establish Jay Howard and Miles Sanders from the jump.
Yeah, and you know, if you have something that's working, then you are going to be, I can say, well, you're predictable because you're going to run the football. That same graph that you sent out, Dallas is predictable because they're pass heavy. They're predictable in what they're going to do. They're
Which skewed. Is actually astonishing because you've got Zeke in that offensive
Absolutely.
Line.
Absolutely. You're skewed. They're skewed heavier to passing the ball. So I know what the Dallas Cowboys is going to do. But you haven't been able to stop it. Why? Because they have arguably the best offensive line in the National Football League, yeah. And if they don't, it's only second to the Indianapolis Colts. But they have the best offensive line, so I can sit back there and I have a little bit more time to throw the football. So I can, if I'm predictable at throwing the football, you got to stop me. And the Titans being conservative and being predictable and running the football. Well, yes. I can be predictable, yes, but you still got to stop it. And I always say, with Derrick Henry, just give him the football, and he will prove you right. Meaning, he will prove that the more and more you give this big guy the ball, the better and better he becomes.
And it's not always going to work. It certainly didn't work against Jacksonville, but it worked very well against Cleveland and Indianapolis. I mean, they... You know, he had 84 yards, 4.5 yards a carry, 82 yards against the Colts, 5.5 yards a carry, 2.5 yards a carry against Jacksonville. And traditionally, it's a team he's been very good against. So the first 2 weeks, it was predictable, but it was productive. So who cares if it's predictable? Because, like, again, I always say this, the most demoralizing thing in football is when the defense knows you're going to run the football and still can't stop you.
Mm-hmm.
That's the most demoralizing thing in almost any sport. When you line up on defense and you know what's coming and you still cannot stop it. And that's why if you can figure out a way to run the football in this game, whether it's 2019 or 1975, if you can run the football knowing that you're going to get those yards, you will win football games. And so occasionally Derrick Henry will get stopped. 2.5 yards a carry on 17 carries. Didn't work against Jacksonville. Then they couldn't go to him in the fourth quarter because they were behind. So sometimes it works. Most of the time it has. Last week it didn't. I think it should work this week against Atlanta.
615-737-1025. We go to Daryl in Hendersonville. Daryl, you're on Morning Drive. What's up, Daryl?
Good morning, guys.
Hey.
I'm going to disagree with you a little bit on the run first mentality. And for me, it gets all down to yards per attempt. You know, Derrick Henry at 4 yards per attempt running the ball in the NFL is good. They get you 80 yards. And most passers in the NFL average between 5 and 7 yards per attempt for a pass. So, you know, if a guy passes 30 times, chances are he's going to have, 300 yards. So I understand about the run setting up the play-action pass for Marcus, but the only reason we're a run-heavy offense is because everybody knows that at the end of the day, Marcus can't hit guys that are open consistently. That's all this is about, and that's not going to change, so that's a sad state of affairs.
30 attempts for 300 yards would be about 10 yards an attempt, not 5.
That'd be 150.
That's a very different number. Patrick Mahomes leads the NFL at 10.5 yards per attempt, so he is in that category. It goes all the way down to like 8. You're in the 8 territory with Tom Brady, Jimmy Garoppolo at 3 and 4. Marcus is at 7.7, which is actually his career high. He was 7.6 last year, which was his career high. That's 14th in the NFL. That's better than Matt Ryan, better than Baker Mayfield, better than Aaron Rodgers, better than Josh Allen. I'm a big yards per attempt guy as well. There is an element of using the pass to set up the run. It's this new wave theory. It's why Matt LaFleur threw the ball 4 times last night on the inside the 5-yard line. the idea that you can set the run up by through the passing game is a very new theory, and it's working. It works around the NFL a lot. It doesn't necessarily mean that it's going to work for this team, the Titans.
615-737-1025, the number. Our buddy Teron Davenport will join us at the bottom of the hour. But coming up next, NFL owners make a pitch. Will the players buy in? We're back after this.
Tennessee Titans need to run the football, and you out there watching, you need the internet almost every minute of the day, in fact, because, hey, you got shows to stream, emails to reply to, and lots of LOLs and lulls to send out. That's why you need Xfinity, guys. You get the fastest, most reliable internet with gig speeds available, so you can get online and get down to business faster. And Xfinity delivers enhanced network security, so all of your connected devices are protected. Get instant alerts when strangers are trying to hop on your network. Set curfews with parental controls and pause your Wi-Fi at dinner time. That's life with Xfinity, the best internet provider in America, according to speedtest.net. Now, that's simple, easy, and awesome. Get started with Xfinity Internet for $20 a month for 12 months with a one-year agreement, or get four times the speed or just $10 more a month for 12 months. Plus, add enhanced network security. Go to Xfinity.com, call 1-800-XFINITY, or visit an Xfinity store today. Requires EcoBill and AutoPay. Offer ends 1-7-2020. That's crazy I can say that. Restrictions apply. New performance starter, 25 megabits internet customers only. Equipment taxes and fees extra and subject to change after term. Regular rates apply. Actual speeds vary and are not guaranteed.
It is Morning Drive live here on a Football Friday. Preseason finale for the Predators tonight on the road against Carolina. We will get to them coming up in the 9 o'clock hour. Teron Davenport's going to join us in about 15 minutes. But saw this actually on the Golic and Wingo show this morning as we were getting ready for the show and here on TV. So NFL owners have made a CBA pitch proposing a 17-game regular season schedule and eliminating the preseason. One, do you think the players would sign off on that? And two, would you as a football fan be down with that? Because I all for one have always said 16 games is perfect. I'll go an extra game if I can eliminate these four preseason games, because this past August was painful.
So my thought reading all the stuff that came out yesterday, the owners backing off the 18-game schedule, wanting a 17-game schedule, my thought is if I'm the NFLPA, I just say, you know what, we're going to allow you to add an extra playoff team in both conferences, which has been thrown about as a potential solution. Figure out the structure of the playoff after that, and then ask for everything. Give me everything I want as a player. I want the cap percentage of revenue increase. I want fewer preseason games. I want less drug testing for marijuana. I want the franchise tag to be limited in some way, and I want shorter rookie contracts. You know, all that stuff. That's all the stuff the players want. And we'll give you an extra playoff game so that you can increase your inventory in the playoffs by almost 20%. You don't think the owners can make that money back on playoff games? With what you lose in preseason games?
No. We can't make that money back.
Are you kidding? It's your most valuable commodity as a playoff game.
You're not making that money back.
Price of tickets, parking, concessions.
Dude, no. TV.
That's true.
Well, that TV revenue
is huge.
Unless you can't do that unless you get a new deal. And then the television people say, okay, we're good with this. But based upon what it is now, no. If you go to 17 games, you eliminate the preseason, you're not making that money back.
That's what I'm saying. I'm saying forget the 17th game. I'm saying keep it at 16 for the 16. Players. Because the players don't want to expand it, right?
And then
even
if you add an extra playoff team, you're losing money. Because everybody plays during the playoff, meaning preseason. Everybody don't play during the playoffs. So you're losing money, period. So, I mean, if I am an owner, I'm not going with that.
Well, I don't think you're right about that. I don't know if I'm right either. I think there's a guessing game here. But if I get you 20% more inventory of your most valuable asset, right? Your playoff game is your most valuable asset as the NFL. You make the most money off a playoff game. If I can go to my TV partner and say, we are increasing our playoff inventory by 20%.
We're
going from 11 games to 13 games, maybe 14 or 15 games.
You can't go to 15. That's too
it depends on the structure of how they do it.
I don't want them to add, you know, four or five more teams in the playoffs because it's an exclusive thing. I don't want everybody to get in the playoffs.
No, it's one team per conference.
And then based on just regular math, if I take away all four preseason games, that's a lot of games and a lot of money that is being gotten – that's being got by NFL teams. Just to add two more playoff teams or what would it be, four more playoff teams or two because you had one in each AFC and NFC? In no world that tells me that I'm making more money in the playoffs when I eliminate all four of my preseason games, because those preseason games are written in a contract. Regardless if you show up at the gate or not, they're getting paid. Yeah. Because you got to buy those tickets. So if you eliminate all those games and say, well, we're going to add two playoff teams, in no world you're getting more – in no world you're getting more money based upon just basic math.
And I'm not saying you eliminate all four. That's not really on the table. I think you cut it to two. So you still can sell one season. You're removing one home preseason game worth of ticket sales. The question is can they recoup that money on a larger television contract that is distributed to all 32 teams?
Well, that's what they have to do.
Because you're charging – because, again, what is the NFL's most valuable commodity? It is not their games on Sunday. It is the playoffs. Those 11 football games are the most valuable commodity that the NFL has. And if the NFL can add one extra playoff game per conference, so two games, that is a 20% increase in inventory, which you can then go to your TV partners and say, we need a 20% boost. This $4 billion TV contract, we need 20%
more. Well, you can't
more.
Eliminate all four preseason games. That's the case.
Right. I don't think you should. I think you eliminate two.
If you eliminate all four of your preseason games based upon the story and what's coming out, just to add one more game, how do you evaluate your roster? I don't get this.
What do you think the players would do? Would the players sign off on this to avoid the entire month of August and get one extra game check of games that matter?
I don't think they want the 17.
You don't think players do?
No.
It means they're getting more money, the players would take the 17 games minus the preseason. But here's the thing.
The
coaches are going to want more time, because how do you then evaluate your roster? Based upon the new collective bargaining, which we have now, means you don't spend as much time in the facility as you used to. So preseason games and practice time becomes a premium because I got to evaluate my roster. If you take away all those games.
If you keep training camp the same duration, then it's really no different than college football. College teams get ready in 4 weeks. Why can't pro teams?
It's totally different because college teams have 100 and some guys, and they don't have to trim their roster down and figure out who's going to be on the team, who's not going to be on the team. In the NFL team, and right, you need those extra games or those extra practice times to evaluate your roster. I don't know where people get off saying, let's just eliminate. I get it. Eliminate one or two. Okay, fine. But eliminating all of preseason.
Can you evaluate rosters by doing scrimmages like they've done with the Bucks and the Patriots into town?
What I'm saying is
you got to give
these organizations, these teams, more time with the players. I can't evaluate a guy because I've seen over and over and over again, a guy is great in practice, but the minute I turn on the lights and put him on television, he turns into a different cat.
Yep.
I can't evaluate my roster if I don't have those preseason games to evaluate or the time that I need to evaluate.
Adam Humphries may not be in the NFL.
Exactly.
So I totally agree that there is a problem when you limit the preseason games as far as evaluating the rosters. My bleeding heart doesn't care. It's just like, whatever millionaire coach, go figure it out. It's your job. Go figure it out. I get that we want our coaches to be able to do the best job possible. The equation, though, isn't – the players seem to want to remove preseason games for a reason. The Rams and Bears didn't even play. The fans certainly don't want to have to
pay. The veteran players want to eliminate it. The guys that are already solidified in they're doing.
Exactly.
The young guys need – see, that's the problem. That's the thing that I hate. It's this – the haves say, let's eliminate preseason. And then they're forgetting about the have-nots who's trying to make rosters. They don't care about them. That's the whole thing.
You have to make policy based on the majority of your personnel. And the majority of your NFLPA is going to be veterans that are currently
why we have the collective bargaining agreement right now that we have, because a bunch of guys thought about themselves instead of the bigger part. They were thinking about themselves and them needing to get back on the field instead of thinking about the bigger whole of the NFL, meaning the players.
So the reason I throw out the extra playoff game, because the NFL has come down from eight. We want 18 games in the regular season. Now they're saying we're not doing that anymore. That's not on the table. Well, now we want a 17-game regular season, and we'll cut the preseason down. The players still don't want to go to 17 games in the regular season unless there's a dollar figure attached. Everything that we talk about with this negotiation comes eventually will come back to money.
And sure, if the,
and
always
if the,
does.
And if the owners will give up a percentage of the revenue to the salary cap and to the players, then the players will come around on all this stuff.
Hey, fans.
And it's just the way it works. But,
hey, fans. Just think about this. Y'all screaming about preseason. You know what's going to happen when they go to 17 games? The ticket prices are going to go up.
Oh, yeah.
Just think about that, fans. When you're screaming and yelling and bitching about get rid of preseason, you're going to pay more, best believe, at the gate. So be ready for it.
Which and again, players don't want to play an extra game either in the regular season without there being significant revenue increase. To me, again, this is why I've come around on where do we add the inventory for the NFL to make their money back? The playoffs. Why would we not want to have better, like the best football we watch is the playoff game. The one that makes the most money for the NFL is the playoff game. The playoffs is where if you added just, because I'm with you, Derek, I like it being exclusive. I don't want it to be just like 75% of the NFL gets into the playoffs. I don't like that. Like the NBA and the NHL, it's like half the leagues make the playoffs. Mm-hmm. I don't want that. I like that the NFL is at about a third. It's about 33% of the league gets in. If you add one more team in both sides, just one, just a single team. I'm not even saying I like that one team will get a bye. I don't even know what the format may look like. But if you're going to say we're going to add a football game, I don't want it to be some crap regular season game for everybody that the players don't want. You know, the ticket prices are going to go up like you just said. Why? Let's add it where it matters. Let's add it where the fans are going to make have the most fun. Let's add it where the players can make the most money, where the NFL can make the most money, and we all win. And where we all win is an extra playoff game. One extra playoff game in the AFC, one extra playoff game in the NFC. We all win as everybody wins. And if I'm a if I'm the NFLPA, I'm offering that to the NFL. I'm not offering 17 games. I'm saying we'll play an extra playoff game. That way you can make a bunch of extra money. We can make a bunch of extra money. The fans are going to love it. We'll cut the preseason. But then you better give us everything else that we want. All this other stuff. Franchise tag, you know, less power in the rookie contracts, you know, blah, blah, all the stuff that the players want. Until the NFL just goes, hey, we'll give you more money. Play 17 games. And then maybe that happens. That's the part that I don't like, is the NFL could just throw an extra percentage point on the revenue share and get kind of whatever they want.
All right, here's what we're going to offer to the audience. Our buddy Teron Davenport, because you guys like him. He's coming up next. Teron Davenport, all things Titans from ESPN and ESPN.com here on Morning Drive. 7:33, welcome back in. Titans-Falcons coming up on Sunday in Atlanta as we welcome in our buddy Teron Davenport, who covers your Tennessee Titans for ESPN and ESPN.com. TD, what's going on, buddy? Happy Friday.
What's going on? Happy Friday. And look, we got to start off like this, man. I got to put you on the come on, man, list, man. Daniel Jones will have a better career than Lamar Jackson.
Wow.
And I think it was Baker Mayfield.
To quote Denzel,
to
quote Denzel Washington in Training Day, you think you can do that to me? I stand by it. Daniel Jones will have a better career. You watch.
What was the tweet?
Who, Baker Mayfield and
what was the tweet? Lamar Jackson
and Kyler Murray.
And Kyler Murray.
Kyler Murray.
Big. Come on, man. I got to do it like Chris Carter, man. That's come on, man.
I thought you were going to come on me for taking the Packers last night against the spread against our Eagles.
Come on, man.
No, I did that.
That's two-time come on, man.
I think I'm just going to check out of the NFL business today.
Teron, he texted me yesterday. He goes, I got the Packers minus 4.5, and I said, thanks a lot, dude. Now we're going to get crushed.
I told you Philly was going to win, man.
You did. You did.
There you go.
I officially have nothing, Teron. I'm going to hand the interview off to Braden and Derek. I'm out.
All right, good job, man.
See you, buddy.
TD, how the kids doing, man? How's the family? How the daughters?
Everything is wonderful, man. I subscribe to the No Bad Days way of living.
TD, I was listening to you last night. I don't know who you were on with because I caught the middle of the show. Last night, and you guys were talking about Adoree Jackson and, you know, the guy showing glimpses of what he was at USC. Where do you think the organization is at with Jackson? Because he's going sort of down the same path that Taywan Taylor went, and eventually You know, Vrabel said enough is enough. John Robinson said enough is enough. And I know one is a third rounder and one is a first rounder, but they said enough is enough. We're going to get you out of here because you're not doing the things we're asking you to do consistently. And Jackson is the same way. At times you see flashes of him, but then at times he shows no ball skills. He shows a lack of awareness. He doesn't show that thing. It's like he's floating out there half the time, and the other half is just like, okay, I'm just going to make the tackle in front of me. Where do you think the organization is at with Adoree Jackson?
I think they're getting to that point. I think they're frustrated as it is, and I think they're getting to that point to where enough is going to be enough. And look, I'll say this. If they would have drafted a corner like I said they should have done, I wouldn't have been shocked if they dealt Adoree before the trade deadline. And the thing is, with him, these errors that he's having, and you look week 3 and week 2, egregious errors that led to touchdowns for the opposing team. Those have to stop, and those are the mental lapses that Mike Vrabel was talking about. So I think they're getting to that point to where it's enough is enough. And I tell you this much, if they don't draft a corner this upcoming draft in the first 3 rounds, I'll be shocked.
I tend to agree with that as well. Teron, you look at the statistical matchup against the Falcons, and you know the Falcons are the most penalized team in the NFL. They've turned the ball over more than almost everybody in the NFL. They're not running the football well. There are some areas where you're seeing some strength on strength for this team, the Titans, as far as the matchups go. For some reason, I like the matchup. You know, Dan Quinn is having messaging problems and buy-in problems in Atlanta in the locker room. I kind of like the situation for the Titans sort of psychologically to go down there and play well.
I get it. You like the situation, but I'll say this much. They go down there and they get off to a bad start. Man, that thing could get really ugly. And the thing is, Matty Ice, right, is turning into a double agent, right? He's turning the ball over at a high rate. But the fact that, man, they still got Julio. And my thing is, if they do not start fast, they're going to be in trouble. And when you have a team that's talented like that and they're playing at home, they're coming off a tough loss, you have to jump on them early. And it's interesting because both of these teams, well, actually this matchup is a game where the two worst teams that scoring in the first quarter are going against each other. They're both averaging 1 point in the first quarter. However, the Falcons are averaging around 11 points, and the Titans are averaging 9 points in the fourth quarter. So they're going to have to get off to an early start because, like I said, that crowd gets behind them, and they start rolling. Man, that offense could really do some things. And then on top of that, Mike Vrabel has said it multiple times, the team is not built to win from behind. So they better jump off to an early start.
TD, from a matchup standpoint, you look at their receivers, Julio Jones, Calvin Ridley, Mohamed Sanu. You look at the Titans' defensive backs. How do you think they would match up from a man-to-man standpoint? Obviously, the Falcons have, I think, the advantage across the board, but is this Adoree Jackson on Calvin Ridley, Butler on Julio, and Logan Ryan on Mohamed Sanu when those opportunities present itself?
Yeah, if they go man, that's the way I would do it. I think that's the best way to do it. I don't care who you are, Jalen Ramsey, Patrick Peterson, Jair Alexander, Marshawn Lattimore, no one is covering Julio one-on-one. But when they do go to him, I personally would have a feisty, tough corner on him, and that's why I think Malcolm Butler is the ideal matchup as far as the guys in that locker room. So I will put Butler on him. Butler's just going to have to fight all the way through the catch and try to punch the ball out. And coincidentally, that's something that they're working on in practice. Adoree Jackson and Calvin Ridley, and Adoree's just going to have to stay awake, man. He can't fall asleep on the backside of the play because if he does, it's going to be touchdown. And then the matchup with Logan Ryan and Sanu, the Rutgers teammates and roommates. So that's going to be a nice matchup as well. I just that Julio matchup is a bad one, though. I don't care who you are, it's a bad one.
Well, what I saw last week, what he did to Indianapolis, I mean, the guy is just a super natural human, and it's going to be tough even with two guys to cover him. So the Titans, I think best bet is to get to the quarterback and kind of fluster Matt Ryan a little bit. The Titans, Atlanta has had trouble stopping the run. They gave up over 4 yards to Marlon Mack. They gave up over 5 yards to Dalvin Cook. Is this a game where, now you try to insert your will with running the football with Derrick Henry, keeping that offense on the bench and controlling the clock and trying to win the football game ugly?
Yeah, I think that is the formula, and that will allow this team to get back to their brand. I don't care what you say. Their brand of football is that ugly football, that physical style of football where you run it and you play tough defense and you play keep away, and that's what they have to do. And with the Falcons defense, struggling against the run, I think it is a week to get Derrick Henry on track, and that's another way that they could get this whole crowd out of the – you go in there, you run the football against a team early in the game, and that takes the crowd out, and that's what they have to do. So I remain convinced that Henry is the focal point of this offense and it all revolves around him. So 100%, I say that's what they need to do.
TD, good stuff as always. We appreciate the time, and thank you for burying me right at the beginning of the interview. It was good stuff, man.
Hey, listen, I told myself I'm going to do it as soon as I saw that tweet. Man, I had to do it.
Teron, go check out a place called Gun Show in Atlanta for some food, all right?
Okay, I'll definitely do that.
All right, there he is, Teron Davenport, ESPN and ESPN.com. I'm just going to shut it down for the rest of the day. I have no idea what I'm talking about, and, that's it.
Don't pick games. Well, you got to pick games today, but still, man.
Here's the thing. Do we have to?
Yeah, we do.
Do we have
that's
to pick
our
games?
Brand. That's our brand.
I think our brand needs to be we're not in the prediction business anymore.
No, we got to predict them. Okay. I like predicting. I like coming back Monday and listening to Nick Kale.
I just officially hate the NFL
disgust,
anymore.
His disgust. And to hear the disgust in his voice about his picks.
Here's what we should do then. We should try to pick them incorrectly.
I'm going to throw darts for now on.
We should try hard to pick it incorrectly. That way we might get it right.
All right. So Teron Davenport, really interesting comment there regarding Adoree Jackson and the what ifs. We'll get back into that on the other side. Stay there. It's Morning Drive, ESPN 102.5 The Game.
I think they're getting to that point. I think they're frustrated as it is, and I think they're getting to that point to where enough is going to be enough. And look, I'll say this. If they would have drafted a corner like I said they should have done, I wouldn't have been shocked if they dealt Adoree before the trade deadline. And the thing is with him, these errors that he's having, and you look week 3 and week 2, egregious errors that led to touchdowns for the opposing team. Those have to stop, and those are the mental lapses that Mike Vrabel was talking about. So I think they're getting to that point to where it's enough is enough. And I tell you this much, if they don't draft a corner this upcoming draft in the first 3 rounds, I'll be shocked.
That was our buddy Teron Davenport with us last segment. And how about that, boys? That's kind of a strong statement that if they would have drafted a corner like Teron thought they should have this past spring, Adoree Jackson could have been out of here at some point this fall.
I mean, you could go get an offensive lineman right now if you wanted to.
Well, right, yeah. Well, Adoree Jackson is...
I mean, that's a first-round pick, and you're paying Malcolm Butler a lot of money. Logan Ryan's a free agent. Adoree Jackson is still technically a financial steal, and TD thinks they could have moved him.
Yeah, he's playing... If you look at what's going on with him, he's playing average at best. And I like to look at Pro Football Focus, and right now they got him graded right in the 60s. And that's unacceptable for a guy that has the talent. You see the ability, but he doesn't, it doesn't show up on Sundays or Thursdays or Mondays when they play. And that's the disappointing part about it, because when they drafted him, their second first-round pick, they had high hopes of this guy being an extremely good punt returner, a guy that, you know, that could be a really good corner in this league. Could it be a shutdown corner? Possibly, yeah, but he could be a really good corner in this league. And I don't think he's held up his end of the bargain on neither one of those categories, being a really good punt returner and a really good corner. This is the guy that electrified everybody in college with some of the things he did. And we just don't see them on, you know, in the NFL. We just don't see the things that he did in college in the NFL. He might give you glimpses here and there, but we don't see it again. He shows no ball skills. He's not opportunistic, meaning he doesn't get interceptions. And it's like he's just floating half the time out there. He's not aware of what's going on in front of him. And that's the big disappointment.
So let me ask you guys this question then, because he's got a ton of speed. We know he's a track guy. Has Adoree Jackson become the Taywan Taylor of the Titans defense?
I think so. I think he's gotten to a point where, you know, he hasn't lived up to the promise of what they saw in college. The ability to make plays, to be electric. He hasn't lived up to it. And it's disappointing to see, because I was high on this guy when he came out of college. I was high on him after his first year. And he just hasn't gotten any better.
I think he's a lot better than Taywan Taylor was. He's a lot better at playing corner than Taylor ever was at playing receiver. So I think you have to kind of start that they're on different tiers. But I think everything you've said, I agree with everything you guys are saying. Teron and Derek, both you guys, it's I loved him coming out of USC. Five-star recruit, was a stud at USC. Played with that just – he's an ultra-competitive fire, you know, guy. Not fiery, like demonstrative. He's like Marcus. Quietly one of the most competitive guys you're ever going to be around. And that helped him early. Now, he dropped an interception. I think it was against – I can't remember what team it was in his first year, where he played the ball perfectly. And had he made the catch in the end zone on defense, they would have won the game, and they eventually, I think, lost the game. And it was one of those where he played it perfectly. You know, he got into the receiver's hip pocket, turned, found the ball in the end zone, and went up and just didn't finish the play. And it feels like ever since that moment, he's been he's lacked that same confidence. And, you know, when you're going back and picking up punts and screwing that up, again, Teron said it, two massive errors. We said it on the show. In the first 10 minutes of each of the last two games, Adoree Jackson has given the other team the ball in first and goal on the 5 and 7 yard lines with two huge mistakes by himself. So those can't happen if you're going to pick up an option on a guy. I think you can get a lot more for Adoree Jackson than you can for Taywan Taylor, right? I think you could go get a starting right guard in theory. Because corners are a premium position. So if you had that an extra piece to put in place for Adoree, because again, Adoree is the only player, I believe, that played all 100% of the snaps against the Colts. I mean, he's still playing a ton of minutes, right? He's playing a ton of snaps. If some other team sees the athletic ability and says, hey, we want to take a chance on a corner, a valuable position, you could get a really good offensive guard for Adoree Jackson. Absolutely. It's not like Taylor where you can't – what do you get, a seventh-round pick for Taywan Taylor? Mm-hmm. Sixth-round pick?
You know? He's right now – he's played 100 – in 10 snaps and in coverage. That's just in coverage. And that's third on the team behind Logan Ryan. Well, Malcolm Butler is one, then Logan Ryan. I'm just saying cornerbacks because Kevin Byard leads them all with 122. He and Malcolm Butler are tied. But if you look at what he's done, he's grading out as a D.
That's not good.
Now, Malcolm Butler's grading out as an F right now, too. But
that seems weird.
This is just in coverage. And Malcolm has blown. He's given up some plays, and he's given up some touchdowns. But I trust Malcolm Butler a little bit more because he's aggressive, and he just plays with a swagger that I like. He's not going to be the best corner, but he plays with an attitude. Adoree Jackson doesn't.
Well, and we had Malcolm on at camp when we were at Titans camp back in August. And remember when he sat down with us, we brought up the Adoree Jackson thing, and he said something, and I'm paraphrasing, funny you say that, Derek, because I just sat down with him a few days ago.
Yeah, and it's
about the whole swagger thing.
Yeah, this kid is just not – he's averaging out as a D. First-round pick. They thought they had first-round talent, and – he's just above LaShawn Sims in coverage. LaShawn Sims is at 60. He's at 63. That's unacceptable. That is just unacceptable. And I know the Tennessee Titans are getting to a point where they're like, listen, you need to he went from being a starter to a backup.
Yep. Teron just sent me a text. He says, Adoree is the Marcus Mariota of the defense. So much potential and shows flashes, but then has plays that make you scratch your head.
Yep. There you go. And he just, I don't get it. He plays with, he can be so much better, but I don't, and maybe this is my fault, our fault, I don't know, but we look at guys and they play so well in college, and then they get into the NFL, and a lot of these guys just don't play up to par. And then some guys don't play well in college, and they get in the NFL, and the light just turn on for them. I don't understand. Maybe he's just not a good NFL player. Maybe he's just
relative to where he was drafted.
Relative to where he was drafted.
Right.
Maybe he's just an okay NFL player. Maybe this is who he is. And his better days were college, where he was fast, just about faster than everybody, more athletic than everybody.
And here he's not.
And here, he's just not.
Yeah. My comparison to Marcus is from a personality standpoint. Very quiet, unassuming guy on the field, but supposedly a fierce competitor. I want to see more of the fierce competitor from Adoree Jackson. Like he's got to flip a switch, because guess what's riding on the line? A first-round fifth-year option for him, which is not a small amount of money for him. So he's either going to be...
Oh, he ain't getting that.
And so if he doesn't get that, then he's going to have to go get another contract somewhere else, and it's not going to be the size he wants it to be of a first-round corner.
He ain't getting that unless he have like 6 interceptions, 7 interceptions.
Right. So like they can pick up the fifth-year option on him, and it's still worth some money. So he still has a lot to... I mean, he's got a ton to play for. So you want to see let me see some of that confidence and that swagger and that, you know, I don't know if you recapture it, if you refine it, if you have one good game and all of a sudden you have it back again. But I agree. It's almost like, you know, from a personality standpoint, Marcus is cut from a very similar cloth. You're not going to see it except for on the rare occasion where I stiff arm a Jacksonville Jaguar or I lead block for somebody. Like, you just don't see the fiery competitor come out in Marcus very often. Adoree's very similar personality-wise, and I'm just not seeing it.
Speaking of really good games, our buddy Lee Sterling from ParamountSports.com was 4-1 for you on this show last Friday. He joins us for another round of winners coming up next as we kick off Hour 3 here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Looking for excitement? Chumba Casino is here. Play anytime, play anywhere. Play on the train, play at the store, play at home, play when you're bored. Play today for your chance to win and get daily bonuses when you log in. So what are you waiting for? Don't delay. Chumba Casino is free to play.
Experience social gameplay like never before. Go to Chumba Casino right now to play hundreds of games, including online slots, bingo, Slingo, and more. Live the Chumba life at ChumbaCasino.com.